Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
It is opening day, and since pretty much everybody is in action, you know I could start pretty much anywhere at all. But let me start right here. You've got the Astros. They have the belt. You've got the Red Sox. They've got the division. And the Yankees, though, are the ones who still demand your attention. Because if hating the Yankees is good for baseball, then get ready for business to be booming. Because the Baby Bombers get things started at 3:37 Eastern, north of the border in Toronto. 3:37 Eastern, which means by 3:45, one of their mashers probably would have jumped ship already, and then the hater aid will be flowing. Do you remember that scrappy little upstart from the fifth borough? You know, the one that clubbed its way to an MLB leading 241 home runs and pushed the Astros to the brink? In case you forgot that crew, it just added Thor to the middle of their lineup. Derek Jeter left his final gift basket in the Big Apple, and instead of some hand sanitizer, an NDA, and a signed Rawlings, the rest of the American League has to deal with not one, but two monsters in the middle of that Yankees lineup every single night. I mean, check out that opening frame for Toronto starter J.A. Happ. Batting first, playing left field, Brett Gardner. Batting second, playing right, Aaron Judge. Batting third and simply swinging the hickory, Giancarlo Stanton. Gardner, Judge, Stanton. And with all due respect to Gardner, it's got to feel like throwing BP to a little leaguer before those two monsters strut to the dish. That's 6'7", 282-pound Aaron Judge. 6'6", 245-pound Stanton. 818 for life. 818 for life.
818 for life.
What I'm talking about is two starting DNs in the NFL. That's two guys bigger than the starting offensive tackles for Bill Parcells' Super Bowl winner. And that's 111 big flies combined last season, meaning the single-season teammate record set by a couple of guys named Mantle and Maris is very much in their sights. Those two alone would be scary enough, but that lineup does not end there, of course. You've got Gary Sanchez, who's got a silver slugger. New second baseman Neil Walker's got one in his closet. Shortstop Didi Gregorius smoked 25 bombs last season. And 1-9, these guys are going to grind pitchers into the dust. Did I mention the rotation? There may be a question mark or two. However, Luis Severino might be your ace. Masahiro Tanaka only going to get better. Sonny Gray, Jordan Montgomery will compete every fifth day. CC Sabathia might not have that cannon holstered onto his left shoulder anymore, but he's going to find a way to get people out. He'll find a way to get people out. And it's not like these guys need to go deep every single night. You get five, you get six, kick up the cleats, turn the rock over to arguably the best bully in baseball. I mean, Aaron Boone, new manager Aaron Boone, he's got to feel like the luckiest guy who ever lived. Now, I know the Sox have responded. Hell, I know a team that won 93 games in spite of finishing DFL and home runs in the American League, added J.D. Martinez in the middle of the lineup. I know David Price is back to looking like David Price, but I know this. The evil empire is going to find a way to do what they always do. Stack the deck, choke people out, make a couple of moves at the trade deadline, and if they need those bats in October, go get them. Because now they've got the seventh highest payroll in baseball. That is the lowest that they have started a season since 92. The $167 million going out the door is walk-around money for these guys. It's their lowest since 03. What I'm getting at is, if there is a deal to be made, they will make it. And more importantly, it resets their luxury tax rate, meaning if you hate these guys now, wait until you see what they do in free agency next year when they offer Manny Machado a couple hundred mil. Or Bryce Harper, a half a bill, or both. But then again, they're not playing for next year. They're playing for right now. And they're going to mash baseballs out of Yankee Stadium and pretty much every other yard at an insane rate. The Baby Bombers are all growed up. The Empire is striking back. Get ready then to boil up a bucket of hate every time you see this club beat another pitching staff into submission, because they're only going to get better. And it all starts in a few hours. Get ready to slam shots of haterade. Baseball's back.
Yankees.
Former Yankee great Bernie Williams is my guest. There was no way you could come on the show, Bernie, and not talk music with me. Back in the day when you were playing baseball, you would get on the plane, play the guitar a little bit, maybe work on some of the scales. The story goes that Derek Jeter would sit in front of you. What did Jeets make of that at the time?
Well, it depended on how tired he was. Sometimes he didn't even want to hear it. But sometimes if he was in a good mood, he would join me in. We'll sing a few tunes. We would sing a few tunes.
Hey, listen, I like that. So how was his voice? And if you got him on a good day, what kind of songs would the two of you collaborate on?
Well, yeah, he has a very eclectic taste in music. I think he's more partial to the R&B sort of rap kind of thing. But he, you know, is a good music enthusiast. So, you know, like maybe just jam to a little bit of a Lionel Richie or maybe a little Chaka Khan or something like that.
I like it. Bernie Williams joining us. All right, Bernie said the Yankees made the biggest move of the offseason, of course, when they brought in Giancarlo Stanton. What was your reaction to that move when it was first announced?
Well, I would say, like, you know, can they get any stronger than what they were last year? Definitely one game, off from being in the World Series on a year that they were supposed to sort of be still in that rebuilding process. I think they went out and had that done in a hurry, and now, you know, acquiring Stanton, Giancarlo, I mean, it just puts that lineup in some sort of a kind of a unfair stratosphere right now. But it's great. I mean, I think my biggest issue was going to be who's going to play right. But I guess they're going to try to share the time. You know, they would probably like the fact that they may take some breaks out in right field. Somebody would play DH. Somebody would move around in the outfield. So it sounds like it's they have it all figured out.
Yankees great Bernie Williams, my guest. Hey, Bernie, one more thought about Stanton. I mean, as great as he is, there seems to be a sense that there's got to be some kind of adjustment that comes along with moving from the National League and then to New York and then all the pressure that comes along with that. So how do you think he'll respond to that challenge?
I think he'll respond well. I think, you know, it's not that we're talking to, you know, or about a guy that is kind of new in the major leagues. I mean, he has put a couple of years under his belt already. Playing in Miami, obviously, it's not going to be, you know, as intense, I think, in my eyes, as New York would be. But I think he has a group, a nice group of people surrounding him. It's not going to be up to him to be the main horse in that lineup. I think that you can, you know, probably make a case of, you know, maybe three or four guys there that will be able to carry the load through the course of the season. So I don't think he'll feel as much pressure to be the man in that team. I think he's going to be fine. I think, you know, probably dealing with the media and dealing with all the peripherals, playing in New York is going to be an adjustment period for that. But as long as he start putting some numbers up, you know, everything is going to be great.
It's opening day, and we're talking to former Yankee great Bernie Williams. Now, Bernie, center fielder Aaron Hicks does not get the attention, maybe, or of course, that Judge or Stanton get, but I know that he's somebody that you're quite familiar with. He said that the two of you have talked about playing center field. So what kind of conversation do you have with him about that position and then playing it in that town?
Well, yeah, I mean, we had, extensive conversations, you know, during the course of spring training. It was, you know, obviously great to be out there and be a little bit of a sounding board and just kind of listening and speaking about my experience with him. His mind seemed to be in the right place, you know, talking about the challenges of playing in New York, being there for a number of years now. You know, this is obviously is going to be an important year for him in his tenure with the Yankees, and he's ready. He's ready to go and give it his all, and I think he's going to do well for this team this year.
You know, one more thought about that. When you're playing, I mean, you're playing center field for the Yankees. It is one of the most iconic positions in all of sports because of the guys who came before you, like Joe DiMaggio, Mickey Mantle. I mean, at the time, what did it mean to you to be a center fielder for the Yankees, given all that?
Well, the first half of my career, I wasn't really paying too much attention. It was obviously mentioned in conversations and kind of like, you know, the marketing that the team had at that time. It was based on, you know, kind of like, you know, mentioning all the legends and mentioning all the tradition. Towards, you know, the second half of my career, however, I started getting more of an appreciation for the position that I was playing. And, you know, the people that had played before me, obviously I had a couple of years under my belt already, and I had already signed a contract that would allow me to remain here, you know, for the rest of my career. And, you know, obviously I was very blessed and very fortunate to have that opportunity to play center field with the Yankees for all those years.
Clones, can you give me a minute so I can talk to you about Casper? Hey, let me ask you something really quickly. Can you imagine taking a car on a 100-day test drive? Or maybe getting a pair of shoes and having 100 days to walk around to see how comfortable they are? Well, this is exactly what Casper is doing for you. They're giving you 100 nights to test the Casper mattress in your own home with their 100-night sleep challenge. Now, think about that now. 100 nights. I did it, and now I get a great night of sleep every single night on my Casper mattress. That's because the mattress has a unique combination of foams that provide the right pressure relief and alignment so you can feel perfectly balanced and comfortable. And it ships for free right to your front door in a how do they do that size box. Don't sweat it. If you don't love it, they'll come and get it. They'll pick it up for free. You get a full refund, and they will not ask why. Take Casper's 100-night sleep challenge, and you will love your mattress as much as I love mine, guaranteed. Right now, when you go to Casper.com/Rome, and you use the promo code Rome, you'll save $50 on select mattresses. That's the promo code Rome at Casper.com/Rome. Save $50. Casper.com/Rome. Terms and conditions do apply. Back to our Daily Jungle. Yankee great Bernie Williams, my guest. Now you're partnering with Minor League Baseball and the Breathless campaign to raise awareness about IPF.
Really,
Bernie,
honest.
It's a disease that took your father's life. For those of you who do not know, or for those who do not know, exactly what is IPF?
IPF stands for idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. It's a devastating disease. It's actually four times more common than Lou Gehrig's disease. We have approximately 132,000 Americans living with IPF. About 50,000 people get diagnosed every year with IPF. It's a terminal disease. Once you get it, you usually have an average from 3 to 5 years. You know, it's my dad died from it in 2001, it was just a hard thing to see him go like that. You know, the disease is characterized for scarring of the lung tissue that obviously limits your ability to breathe up to the point that you cannot breathe anymore. We are basically, you know, talking to people, trying to create awareness about this disease, and trying to get people to go to our website. It's called breathlessipf.com to see, you know, if you have these symptoms, you know, fatigue, you know, you're uncomfortable, you know, feeling on your chest, all this dry, persistent cough. To go out there and get some information, try to go to a pulmonologist to get diagnosed, you know, try to create a lot of awareness about this disease that is devastating.
Mm. Bernie, once again, if people want more information about that, where would they go to get it?
Yes, breathlessipf.com is the website. You will get an opportunity to talk to doctors, to talk to patients, to talk to caretakers, caregivers, you know, people that are in you know, involved in trying to find a cure or trying to find methods to deal with this disease. It's really important for people to go into that website and check it out.
I'm not much into betting, but I got a prop bet for you. Which ends first, NFL kickoffs or Odell Beckham rumors and speculation? At this rate, I'm guessing we're going to have robots placing the ball in the 25 after every single score, and people will still be talking about whether Odell Beckham should be, could be, or will be traded. The latest item had everybody buzzing. Adam Schefter tweeted, Giants have asked for at least 2 first-round picks in return for Odell Beckham Jr., a league source tells ESPN. Even though team insists it is not shopping him, doesn't mean they get it or close to it or even trade OBJ, but they've asked for at least 2 first-round picks. So what's that mean? That means we now get to play that parlor game of would you trade 2 first-round picks for Odell Beckham? And to me, the answer is hell yes. Hell yes, I would. Of course I would trade two number one picks to get this guy. In fact, I'd be faxing paperwork to the league office before the Giants could even get off the phone. The question is, why would the Giants want to make that deal? Because while I would trade two number ones all day long for Beckham, if I'm the Giants, I'm saying you've got to do better than that. If I'm the Giants, I'm not doing it. Not if you're going with Eli Manning as your quarterback for the next year or two. And not if you like winning football games. Because the difference between the Giants with Beckham and the Giants without Beckham is shocking. The guy is a sure thing. Draft picks by their nature are not. What's the rate of first-round picks that turn into valuable contributors? I mean, maybe you get lucky. Maybe you get a couple of starting players. But you could also end up getting jammed, getting screwed, ending up with a couple of slugs who never pan out. Fact is, you don't know what you're getting. In Beckham, you know exactly what you have. You've got a Hall of Fame talent who's just 25, who is far and away the best player you have. And to me, two first-round picks, especially if they're lower in the first round, like, say, the Rams picks, that's a team that might be bearing in on this guy. If you get those two picks, it's not enough for a guy like that, regardless of how big of a headache you think that guy is. Hey, why don't you do this? Go ask the Colts back in the day how having a couple of high draft picks worked out. I mean, not even just high draft picks, if you're old enough to remember, but the first two picks in the entire draft. They literally had the first two picks, number one and number two. Remember who they used them on? Steve Entman and Quinton Coriat, a pair of All-Americans who were going to be the future of that defense and ended up doing almost nothing in the NFL. Look, you're not going to draft a wide receiver better than Beckham. And it's nearly impossible to draft one, much less two Hall of Famers with those picks. So you tell me, what would you rather have? A Hall of Fame wide receiver, age 25, you know exactly what you have, or maybe a starting safety and a starting linebacker? Yes, the guy can be a headache. But what would you rather have? A guy who's super chill, who's an average wide receiver, or somebody who can do what Beckham does? I got another question. Why is this even a story? I mean, why is it even a story? Is it a story because it might happen? Is it a story because the Giants are sick of this guy's act? Or is it a story because they don't want to pay him? Or is it a story because the Giants are simply doing what every other team would do in their situation? And that's say that every player has a price, even Tom Brady. Or are they just looking to send Beckham a message and shake him up? I'm going to say it's all the above. Because as always, when you're talking about trading a superstar, the question is, can you get equal value for that superstar? In the NFL, the answer generally is no, you can't. I mean, how often do you ever see an NFL superstar get traded? Herschel Walker, sure. Brett Favre? Yeah, Brett Favre was traded, but Brett Favre was not Brett Favre when he was champ. Woo! Woo! Damn, man, I'm dried out. I'll try it again in a minute. Like Champ Bailey. Champ Bailey was traded, but that was for Clinton Portis. So one star for another. What I'm saying is it does not happen very often. And what I'm also saying is there's a whole lot of energy being spent and a ton of ink being spilled over something that might never, ever happen. It could. And if Beckham does get traded for two first-round picks, whoever gets Beckham is going to work the Giants. The draft cannot get here fast enough because at least then that will end the will Odell get traded story. At least until after the draft when the story becomes will Odell hold out. As for the trade, if I'm the Rams, I send them my next two first-rounders all day long. If I'm the Giants, I tell Rams GM Les Snead, do better. It's not enough. And if I'm Beckham himself, I continue to rehab my ass off, and I make sure that I don't end up getting grammed by some rando. And then be sure to tune in once again tomorrow for another update because this story clearly is not going away. This episode of the Daily Jungle brought to you in part by Burrow, handcrafted in the USA. Burrow makes amazing couches for real life. So let's talk about this for a minute. We're talking about the same quality that you would expect from high-end retailers, but you get it without breaking the bank. And everything is customizable. So you pick your size, your color, your armrest height, and you get the couch that is perfect for you. The thing I love about Burrow couches, you can eat on them. I mean, who doesn't get in front of a ball game and get their grub on? All Burrow furniture is easy to put together and take apart. No tools required, just your bare hands. Look, I love that too. I'll admit it. I'm not a very handy guy. I'm just not. I love it that I don't need tools. Enjoy 30 days of naps on your Burrow risk-free. If for any reason you choose not to keep it, the return process is simple. Go try a Burrow couch for yourself. Order it right now. It ships in a jiffy. Use the promo code ROAM at Burrow.com and get $50 off your order. Burrow.com. Offer code ROAM. Put it in all caps. It will not work unless it's in all caps. Burrow.com. Offer code ROAM, all caps. Mike Babcock is my guest. Mike, it is so good to have you back on. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you?
Mike, I'm doing great. It's good to hear your voice. You're coming off a 4-3 win last night, Mike, over Florida. Let me start right there. You scored 3 goals in the first period, and that was after having your 13-game home winning streak stopped on Monday. Mike, Florida was red hot coming in. They've won 20 of 27 since Christmas. They're battling for everything. Did last night then have a playoff feel to you, and how important was it to gain control early on the way your guys did?
Well, I thought it was a good game for us. Obviously, you got a team coming in that can't afford to lose, and they're trying to crawl their way into the playoffs. We were like that last year. I know how hungry we were. We talked about it as a group, and we wanted to start fast. We had dropped the ball the night before, hadn't played the kind of intensity that we wanted to, and so it was important to bounce back. But I thought it was a good win for our team. They played hard. They really challenged us down the stretch in the game, but we found a way to get it done.
Mike, let me ask you about Mitch Marner. He had a goal and an assist last night, and that extends his point streak to 10 games. It seems like he's taken his game to a new level since you adjusted the lineup in late January. His season may have got off to kind of a slow start in terms of production. So what's been the biggest difference between where he is now and where he was a few months ago?
Well, I think, good point. I mean, make an adjustment in the line, but we made an adjustment in the line because he was ready to. At the start of the year, you have a real good first season. You start to dominate, and people know who you are. It gets way harder in the league, and it gets tighter. And, for whatever reason, it didn't happen for him. And he probably got in his own way a little bit, started thinking too much. But as his work ethic increased, and he's a stronger guy now, he's more competitive, and he's playing like that. He's playing with good players, as Nazem Kadri and Patrick Marleau. Marleau's a real good veteran, keeps him under control, helps him out, and they've been dominant for us.
And also Austin Matthews, who scored his 30th goal last night, which gives him 30 goals in each of his first two seasons. What do you make of the way he's played since he's come back from injury?
Yeah, it's been a tough year in that way for him. He's missed 20 games, been injured 3 times, and so getting in the rhythm, getting in sync the way he's capable of hasn't happened yet. He had a real good first game back. It's always like that when you come back. It's hard to get up to pace. Doesn't matter how much you practiced or how much you skated. And so, but we got time before the playoffs. He should be, really playing well the time that happens. So he's a 200-foot player. He's a big man. He's a dominant forward for us. We need him to be, at the top of his game if we're going to have success in playoffs.
And Maple Leafs head coach Mike Babcock joining us. I want to ask about the postseason in a minute, but when I introduced you like I always do, there was quite a resume for me to get down. You had this great story recently about your approach to success and the fact that you don't celebrate it too much. You said, quote, "One time I'd won a championship or something. I'm sitting by the lakeside fireplace. I'm having a rum. My dad's having a scotch. I said, things are going pretty good," kind of tooting my own horn. And he said, quote, "When was that again?" So what was your reaction, Mike, when you heard that? And what was your takeaway from that?
Well, all he was doing was we had just won the cup in Detroit and won Olympic gold. And like you said, I was tooting my own horn probably. And he basically said, those things are over with. It's about making new memories. And I really believe in that. If you want to be the best at what you do, you got to grind and you got to enjoy it. You got to grind and you got to get better each and every day. And what you did last year is not good enough next year. I don't care what business you're in or someone's going to have your job. So, we've been real fortunate to come to Toronto, came to an organization that needed a new start. We have that. We look like we got a real good platform for success here for the next while. And we're excited about our group and our opportunity.
Hey, Mike, I get it. I understand that fully, but you got to enjoy it on some level, right? I know you probably do. How long do you allow yourself to enjoy something like that, a Stanley Cup or a gold medal?
Well, there's no question. Jim, no one enjoys their family and success more than I do. I got to tell you that. And But I enjoy each day, and I enjoy what I'm doing, and I sure like another opportunity to have some success here in Toronto. And saying that, you know, when you get a chance to talk about, when you introduced me, I'm a two-time Olympic gold medalist. Who's a two-time Olympic gold medalist? Like, it's impossible. Like, that's just how fortunate you are. But I also believe there's going to be time in your life when you're done to look back at all those things and walk down memory lane. I still do once in a while. Someone comes over and says, hey, look, take a look at your stuff. You do that. But in reality is, I think the memories that we're creating now are exciting. And so we're trying to create the best ones we possibly can.
Toronto Maple Leafs head coach Mike Babcock joins us for a few more moments. So you've got a lot of youth on this team, Mike, but at the same time, it's a team that you took to the playoffs last season, and you played a series against the Caps that could not have been any tighter. All six games decided by one goal, five of them go to overtime. Obviously, you hate to lose any playoff series, but how valuable was that experience for this young team?
Well, I think it was really good, obviously. The other thing we found out when we got there is, it wasn't as much about skill as it was about will. We needed to be a heavier, hungrier team. And I thought Washington, they've taken some nicks over the years, and I thought they really dug in and they did a good job. And in the end, they got better as the series went on, and we didn't. But that's a real message to you. But until you've been in it a few times, you don't know that. So we're excited about our opportunity this year. We're a much deeper team. And saying that, I mean, we're going to play a real good team in the first round. Is that going to be Boston? Is it going to be Tampa? I don't know the answer to that. But it'll be exciting, it'll be fun, and we'll be prepared.
Yeah, I like that. It's more about skill than will, or more about will than skill at that level. So a final thought. You've got the second highest points total in the NHL since January 24th, despite the fact that Matthews missed those 10 games. What's that tell you about the depth of this team, Mike? And do you feel like you're peaking at just the right time?
Well, there's no question about that. We really feel we've improved our depth as the years gone on. Now, everyone talks about the big dogs like that, but Kapanen, Janssen, Dermott, kids that we've added from the minors to give us much more depth and much more speed have made huge differences to us. And so we feel we're deep in all spots. Now, in the end, you got to get it done. You talk about these teams all year long, and you cover sport. You know, we should talk about teams, and some teams don't find a way to get it done. We want to be one of those teams that gets it done. And, you know, we're set up for a good run here over a number of years, but in sport, next year never comes. Here's your opportunity right now. Let's dig in and do something with it.
All right, so my final thought then, I mean, you've been there so many times. In order to have success in the postseason, is there a process? Is there something you have to go through in order to get there? Or can you just show up and get it done? In other words, how do you prepare your young guys for it if they have not done it?
Yeah, you're 100% right. In the end, you know, there's lots of people that have never done it that get it done. But, you know, I think adding Ron Hainsey, who won a cup last year in Pittsburgh, real good veteran. Adding Patrick Marleau, who's out in San Jose a lot of years, real good veteran guys, is stable, that give us a good stable leadership that way. I think that'll help. But in the end, there's lots of young people that are going to be in this playoff year, and someone's going to find a way to get it done. Why not us?
Toronto Maple Leafs having a huge regular season, and it all starts up once again in the postseason. They're at the Islanders tomorrow night. Mike Babcock, my guest. Mike, so great to get caught up. Thanks for making time for the program, as always, and really good to talk to you, Mike. Thank you so much.
Hey, Jim, great talking to you. Thanks for having me on. Have a great day, Noel.
Clones, what's cracking? It's Thursday already. Final Four is Saturday. Championship game on Monday. There is still a way for you to cash in on March Madness at MyBookie. If you have not signed up yet, it is not too late. Once again, it doesn't matter if you've been a player for years or you just want to get in on the action this weekend. Lay some money down. Score big on college basketball. Join thousands of online players and start betting right now at MyBookie.ag. Now, are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout? That would be my concern. It's not with MyBookie. When you win with MyBookie, they pay fast, and they do so without hassles. You are wasting your time betting anyplace else. They've even got in-game live betting, so you can place a bet even after they tip. So you want to join right now. Do it now, and MyBookie will match your first deposit with a 50% bonus. Use the promo code ROME to activate this offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. The Final Four is Saturday. The championship game is Monday. Play, win, and get paid with MyBookie.ag. We are joined by Sean Casey. Sean, it's great to have you on. Good morning. How are you?
Romy, what's up, man? Opening day is finally here, huh, man? Happy opening day to you.
Happy opening day, Sean. It's become kind of a tradition around here. Opening day, you come on the program. How pumped up are you to get opening day underway? And is there any other time of year that gives you the kind of feeling you have right now?
No, it's the best time of year, especially for us, you know, being here at the network all offseason. You're talking about signings and where guys might be going and free agents and all that stuff. Now you're able to talk about games again and you know, being excited about the teams. And, you know, this is a, you know, I don't go on until 7 o'clock tonight, but I'm at the network. I'm watching all the games on all the TVs we have. So it's I love it, man.
Yeah, it's like you're getting there before 7 hours before the game actually starts. All right, so let's talk about a few things, Sean. What about the MLB managerial debut of Aaron Boone? Now, you played with him for six years in Cincinnati. How do you think he'll do as a manager?
I'm so excited for him, man. He's going to do great. I mean, I think one thing what Cashman was looking for is a guy that could manage the players and that would have a good relationship with him, you know, in that front office. And Booney's the guy. I mean, listen, I think he's got a great staff. You know, he's a guy that you know, I played with him for 6 years, one of my best friends in the game, and I couldn't see a better fit for him than being in New York. And he's excited about it. He's always wanted to be in the dugout. He figured this, you know, the opportunity with the Yankees was such a big one, and he's going to do great there, especially with the team he has and the firepower he has in that lineup.
Sean Casey joining us. You know, the other thing about him, he played for his father in the major leagues, and Sean, that's never an easy thing. What do you make of the way he handled that challenge?
Oh, that's a great question, Romy, because, you know, you're right, man. I remember playing 3 years. You know, Bob was our manager, and Booney was such a pro. Like, you never would have known that was his dad. I mean, he still went about his business. He worked as hard as anybody out there. He played the game right, played the game hard. There was no favoritism there. And just the way Aaron handled that, you know, showed a lot about, you know, who he is. And I think when you look back at his track record, you know, he said, I'm 44 years old. I've spent the last 44 years in the game of baseball, and he's ready for that job.
We are talking to Sean Casey. Now, Sean, during spring training, you travel around and you talk to a lot of different guys. In fact, you talk with players as part of 30 clubs in 30 days. One of the guys that you chopped it up with was Nolan Arenado, and you talked about fielding. What was your takeaway from that conversation?
Well, man, this guy's special. I mean, I think if you're a baseball fan, I mean, you know, try and lock in on what Nolan Arenado does night in and night out. You know, offensively, he's one of the best players in the game, but getting a chance to talk to him defensively about what he does, what his routine is. You know, he first talked about how he takes ground balls all the way back by the grass, you know, outfield dirt meets. He takes his ground balls there, gets like 20 of them there to get that throw going. Then he moves in, 20 to his left, 20 to his right, makes a bunch of throws. And I tell you what, Romy, when you watch that guy play night in and night out, that's why he's an MVP caliber player, you know, every year, because he puts the work in and he's special.
I mean, Sean, I agree with you. I think the guy really is special. I didn't think that I'd be asking you this question at any point or this soon in his career, but where do you think he impacts the game more, defensively or offensively?
Wow, you know what? I tell you what. That's a great question. That's why his WAR is so good. But he offensively, he's one of the best players in the game. He hits a lot of home runs, drives in a ton of runs. I think he's impactful there, just because he does it day in and day out. But you win championships with pitching and defense, and Nolan Arenado is the best in the business at third base. So I think he's one of those total players. He's kind of like that Mike Trout kind of guy where you're like, you know, this guy's next level.
Sean Casey joining us. Let's stay on third base for a minute. As long as we're talking about great third baseman, Adrian Beltre, 3,000 career hits, entering his 21st Major League season. How impressive is it, Case, that he's not only still out there, but he's playing at the level he's playing at?
Oh, it's unbelievable. You know, you go back and look at his career. I mean, I think this is his 20-some year, 21st year, you know, what he's done, 3,000 hits, 500 homers. I don't know the exact number, Romy, but it's like five or six guys in the history of the game have done that, which is absolutely phenomenal. And the way he plays defense, too, at such a position that demands so much at third base. I mean, we're looking at somebody that's one of the best players to ever play the game. And like I said before, you hope the fans, when they watch Adrian Beltre play, appreciate what he's done and what he continues to do.
We are talking to Sean Casey. Now, Sean, you spent some time also with Joey Gallo of the Rangers talking about his approach to hitting. And guys are very open now about talking about things like spin rate, launch angles, other terms like that. When you were playing, was that something that you were thinking about, or was there a totally different approach back then?
You know, it's amazing because, you know, you do talk to these guys and you ask them about that stuff, or you ask them about the new sabermetrics that we're, you know, I think fans are more interested in. And those guys aren't talking a lot about that stuff. I think, you know, when you talk launch angle and everyone's like, oh, he's got to get a launch angle of 25 degrees, 26 degrees with this exit velocity and all that stuff. Well, that's good and all, but guess what? When you blink an eye at 0.4 seconds and the thing is coming 95 miles an hour and sinking and cutting and splitting and all that stuff, it's tough to be like, oh, I'm going to get the launch angle perfect here. You know, I think these guys, more this generation of players, is more thinking about getting the ball in the air, trying to get a pitch up that they can drive in the air, and they feel like they have more success with that. But, you know, with that, you're seeing more strikeouts and you're seeing more home runs. So it's just a different mentality of the guys. But I don't think the guys are looking so much as the stats as you think they are. I think they're more thinking about getting the ball in the air and seeing it and hitting it.
You know they're thinking about that. Definitely get the ball in the air. And, Sean, during your career, there were so many legendary moments. I want to ask you about something, though, that did not happen on the field, but rather in a hotel meeting room when you were going through arbitration back in 2001. Arbitration, Sean, is never fun. We know this. Both sides get kind of heated. At one point, there was a break, and you were talking to your wife, Mandy, and one of the things you said was it smelled terrible in the room. What happened next?
Well, you know what, Roby, there are it's amazing looking back at your career on and off the field of some of those stories. But I went to arbitration, was a few $100,000 apart, didn't feel like I should be there. I brought my wife in the arbitration room with Jim Bowden and the Reds and obviously their team and then the commissioner's team and then our team. And I came out so heated. My agent was like, "Whenever you get fired up, just write it down. You know, don't show any emotion." So I'm writing things down. These guys are like, "This guy's a base clogger, this and that." I'm like, "Oh, you gotta be kidding me!" So I'm writing it down, sweating bullets. I'm like sweating profusely, right? So we go out to the break, and we're sitting there. Mandy and I are talking. I'm telling Mandy, "This is the reason you got to come. It's such a business. You know, they're crushing you." And then Jim Bowden comes up to me, who's my general manager at the time, who's fighting me in this arbitration case. He's like, "Hey, Case, you know, I just want to tell you, this is, you know, this is business, not personal." I was like, "No, it's now personal, Jim. I just personally, you know, I'm so fired up in there." So he walks away, and I tell Mandy, like, "I'm so fired up, can't believe it." I was like, "And something smells so bad in there. It's disgusting, you know?" And Mandy leans in. She's like, "Oh, man, I think it's you." I'm like, "Oh, my God." I'm like, "It is me." I smell my jacket, and my wife says, "Is that the jacket that the cat pissed on the last road trip of the year?" And I go, "Yeah, I think it is." I go, "Didn't you get this dry cleaned?" He goes, "Well, they weren't able to get the cat piss out." So I'm like, "You got to be kidding me." So I throw my jacket away. I literally went, Romy, I went back into the 2 more hours of the hearing, fully, smelled like a cat urine, and I really didn't care at that point. I was like, "I hope everybody smells the cat urine that's going on, and I need to get it." So I won the arbitration case, and the first thing I did, I went and bought myself a new suit that next week.
Why, Case? Why? That is awesome. What an amazing story that is. That is the absolute best. Sean Casey joining us. So glad you told that story. Listen, there's no way you come on. Well, not tell that story, Sean, but there's no way you come on the program. We don't talk about the work that you're doing with the Miracle League of South Hills, which creates opportunities for everybody to play the game of baseball. Opening day is May 12th. How much are you looking forward to getting that season underway?
Oh, man. Thank you so much, Romy. Dude, it's the greatest thing I ever did. You know, we just had a huge fundraiser because we're trying to raise a lot of money. We have a bunch of projects that are coming up, and got some stuff. Eddie Vedder sent some stuff, and Anthony Rizzo and Tomey and all the guys that I know, and Theo Epstein gave us a big package. We raised almost $100,000 at our fundraiser this past year. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man. 350 special needs kids that we have. It just continues to grow every year. And you know, you can go to MiracleLeagueSouthHills.org if you want to help us out. Every penny helps us out. It all goes to our organization. But those kids have been the greatest thing I've ever done in my life, no doubt about it. So cannot wait for that opening day. That might be the greatest day of the year for me.
You know, Sean, I was going to say, and you just answered it in part, but you had a great career as a player. You're having a great career as an analyst now. These are both things that I know you're proud of, and rightfully so. But do either of those things compare to the pride and the joy that you get from the Miracle League?
They really don't, Romy, just because, you know, when you've had such an impact and you can see the joy of those kids' faces when they're playing and the parents in the stands knowing that they're able to, like, have an hour every week where they get to be part of the team. They get to have new friends. They get to be, you know, be a normal kid for that time. And the impact it's had in our community out there in Pittsburgh has been phenomenal. Like, it no doubt is probably the biggest accomplishment of my life.
It is the Miracle League of the South Hills. Sean, one more time, if people want to help out in any way they can, what's the best way for them to do so?
Yeah, if they go to MiracleLeagueSouthHills.org, and you can go and help us out. And like I said, people all over the country have helped us, so we really do appreciate the support. And Romy, man, I really do appreciate you always plugging that. It's a big deal. Thank you.
Case, you're the best. Today's episode of The Daily Jungle is brought to you by Fan Exchange. Are you thinking about buying tickets to your favorite sports, concert, or theater event? Maybe you want to check out March Madness courtside. You got the Final Four on Saturday. You've got the championship game on Monday. Maybe you'd rather be courtside than on your couch. If so, head on over to fanexchange.com for a safe, easy, and reliable experience. Tickets purchased on Fan Exchange are always guaranteed. You don't have to sweat getting to the gate and worrying about getting in. So, whether it's March Madness or Major League Baseball, or WrestleMania, or Coachella, or a Broadway musical, Fan Exchange will get you closer to the action. You can find the very best seats at the very best prices at fanexchange.com. Just use the promo code ROME. The promo code ROME will get you 50% off service fees on your next purchase. Fan Exchange, we have tickets. Check it out now. Fan Exchange. I'm a SoCal native, born and raised in Los Angeles. Why not? What could happen? Jeff in SoCal. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Rome, what up, my man? Hey, real quick, my alum, the University of Kansas, they tweeted out a picture this morning that coaching legend Larry Brown has joined the team in San Antonio. So real quick, I want to issue a public service announcement to men using gyms or health clubs in the greater San Antonio area this week. Keep your head on a swivel. Now, while the men's tournament has been chaos, the women's tournament, it's all chalk, Romy. All number one seeds have made the final four. Shocking. These women are way too fundamentally sound for upsets to happen. The only time anyone is upset in women's basketball is when the fans get their pregame haircut and it's not short enough for their liking. I mean,
that's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
You know, I can't lie. I got kind of lulled into a telephone call. So let's go to SoCal. Jeff in SoCal, what's going on? I mean, how bad could it be? Immediately starts off with, okay, Rome, you know, I went to Kansas and Larry Brown. And I perk up immediately, Larry Brown, which is too bad. Larry Brown, if you listen to the show back in the day, especially before we syndicated the program, Larry Brown was always one of my favorite guests ever. I mean, the guy was so real. These deliberate, candid, honest interviews that he used to do on this program were legendary. He literally was my favorite guest. At that time, Larry Brown, you know, long before, I mean, Mark Grace would call the show then. Mike Piazza was doing the show. Elk was probably into the program. But there was nobody like Larry Brown. I mean, I could talk to this guy every single week. He was so interesting. And then the ill-fated Toby phone call, which wrecked everything. From that point on, I no longer thought of Larry Brown as one of the greatest coaches ever, a Hall of Famer, one of the best interviews ever on the program. There just was no going back because of that phone call. So now whenever a caller says Larry Brown, immediately I perk up. So that got my attention. But then when he went to the four seeds in the women's tournament, all being chalk and them being fundamentally sound, you know, these are all like trigger items. Trigger terms, four number one seeds, women's tournament, all chalk, fundamentally sound. That's a trigger item right there, a trigger phrase. When somebody goes with, and especially that guy, and I should have known better, goes with the phrase fundamentally sound, somebody's going to get fundamentally run. And that's exactly what happened to Jeff in SoCal.
Bruh,
this is amazing. I don't know if you know this or if I've ever told you this. Fact of the matter is, Silk, you're on. I was born in L.A., but the parents lived in HB. I literally, as a toddler, brah, lived in Huntington Beach back in the day. Did you know that story,
brah? It all makes sense now, brah.
Right.
Brah. Guys, thanks, Albie. The callers today have been completely awful. Lackluster would be a good way of describing it. I want to do a little show platform delivery housekeeping. I wasn't personally bummed that the 1090 bailed. I know it's bad for the brand, and you'll get that going again. But I was always streaming on my smartphone through radio.com. But now that you've gotten added to SiriusXM, brah, it's unbelievable. I went over to SiriusXM in 06 when Stern came over, and I have the app on my phone. Clones, listen, you can pause, fast forward, and rewind content. So when I had to duck into a meeting, I put the show on pause. I came out, pick the show right back up again. You can't do that with all apps. It's completely awesome. Get yourself onto SiriusXM. Get the app for your phone. Now, I know it's been in the news. Little incident the other day at Dodger Stadium involving sewage. I'm not going to get off scatological on you, bro. Of course not, because I'm classy. Right, Albie? Bruh. Thanks, bruh. So what I would say is, since I'm teaching now, I'm just going to get involved in a little personification. That sewage spill was the Dodger Stadium reaction to the hated water hoarding, battery chucking, crunchy, overpriced scum of NoCal coming into town, brah. Of course, tonight, or actually, it's 4:10, weird start today. But I just want to thank NoCal, because we've got this awesome California aqueduct that just funnels water down. I want to shout out to Hetch Hetchy, to Stockton, to Tehachapi. Thanks. Keep the water coming. And we're going to use that water to clean up the sewage spill and roll out the red, white, and blue bunting and take down the hated NoCals. Was so, so sad to hear about Mad Bum's injury. It's going to be a great season in the NL West this year, brah.
Clones.
Thanks, brah. Clones, step your game up. Alvy, I'll listen to you and watch you back when I get home. Brah.
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 Brah. Brah.
Is it live or is it memorized? Brah. Brah. Bra,
bra,
you still there, Silk? Bra.
Bra. Bra. Yeah, bra.
You are still there, right?
Bra. I'm still here, bra.
Good job, Silk. Great talking. Thanks for picking me up. See, that's what I needed.
Good night now!